tonight on The Goblin's Corner.
Let's talk about space.
Part 3.
That's how we roll. 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 That's how we roll.
Welcome to The Goblin's Corner. My name is Eric.
And I'm Matt.
And tonight,
we're talking about space still.
Yeah, we're still going on about space.
It's big. There's a lot to talk about.
And we haven't even hit the tip of the iceberg yet.
We would be here for the rest of everyone's life.
For the rest of time and space.
Because it's getting bigger at the moment.
And tonight, we're going to talk about two things that we felt should encompass at least one episode, potentially two, but aliens.
Yes.
And of course, if you talk about aliens, you have to talk about
planets.
The planets, because, you know, genotype and phenotype, baby, you got to have that environment to spur the alien development.
Yes. This episode could also be called Matt's Pet Peeves About Space.
Yes. So before we get to all of that, what's going on with you, man?
Oh, you know, just hanging out, running, always running. Thousand years worth of contracts this week.
Matt's been a busy guy this week. If for those of you who don't know, Matt's house is actually going to be in a movie very soon. Can I say the movie?
Yes, actually, we didn't sign an NDA.
Good. Then, okay, we'll just say it's, you want to
sure.
Talk about that?
So we're in Atlanta and they do a lot of filming around here.
It's true.
And so, some guy showed up at my house and they're like, hey, by the way, we'd love to use your house. We're filming Black Mafia Family. And I'm like, okay, it is based off of a true story and it's a true story I was aware of, which happened in Detroit. And my brain is just like, yeah, sure, man. Why not? Yeah.
Sure. Atlanta looks a lot like Detroit.
Except.
It doesn't.
Not much at all.
Not at all.
So, yeah, they're coming in and, you know, borrowing the house for a couple, 3, 4, 5 days at a time. And I'll be living out of a hotel with 3 cats. It'll be
fun.
Great.
Lots of fun.
Yeah.
Well,
about you, though? You got things going on. You've been doing things.
I've been building stuff, man. Yeah. We've been building a lot of stuff on Twitch lately. Mostly just me just messing around with some dungeon tiles, showing people how to make some flocking. I made some of the little grass things last episode.
Right.
And we're just having fun with that. And, of course, pretty soon we'll be gearing up. You might be doing a little bit of building as well, little Goblin Corner build-alongs, although I would consider them to be drink-alongs because...
Yes.
As Matt is not necessarily the artistic type, he is a Leonardo when it comes to mixology.
I'll take that. That is grossly overstated because that dude was amazing, but I'll take it regardless.
I don't know. Your drinks are pretty amazing, too.
I try. But yeah, as soon as all of the filming and everything settles down, then I am not lugging my whole bar to the hotel because be ludicrous.
Take a snapshot of that so that, you know, it's not gone when you get done filming.
I have already taken pictures of my bar so that just in case things are missing,
yep,
I'll be able to present that bill. Some of that stuff isn't easy to come by.
We've been having a lot of fun on the Twitterverse as well and all the Instagram verses and the Facebook verses and all the verses. I will say that...
We could use some people to... toss some stars our ways and actually some reviews would be fantastic. They help out a lot when it comes to the algorithm.
Sure. Yeah. If you guys want to give us a rating, if you like this show, go ahead, drop it off. I know Apple has that and a couple other ones do the ratings. It really doesn't do anything for us per se. I mean, we get like a warm, fuzzy feeling, but it does.
And we appreciate it.
And we do. But it does bump up the ratings in terms of the algorithm, as Matt said, and it means that more people can find our show, which means we can theoretically make people better at their games.
Yep.
So,
or at least have more fun.
Yeah. And if you don't like that, you can always write to us and chat with us. We're very friendly. You can write to me, eric@goblinscorner.com or
matt@goblinscorner.com.
And of course, our PR person will always answer info@goblinscorner.com. We don't actually have a PR person.
It's just one or the other of us.
Yeah. Usually me. All right. So you've got a question of the week, Matt. So let's go ahead and jump into that before we wax philosophical here.
I do. This one is in a slightly different vein than I usually do.
Okay.
I'm going to need you to reach deep into your psyche for a second. You ready?
I'm ready for it. I'm preparing myself mentally, physically, emotionally.
Sure.
Just hit me.
Your spaceship docks to a derelict old space station that has been lost for years. Mm-hmm. What do you absolutely not want to see when you open the doors?
God, there's so many things. I'm going to try to keep this PG.
Sure.
Because we could go really, I mean, we could go really dark, my friend, with mm-hmm. this. I'm going to say the airlock door opens up and it's all of my ex-girlfriends and they all have IBM Think Centers that are broken and they want me to fix them. I definitely would not want to see that. Say what PG on that one, because I could have gone, you know.
Well, I mean, you could have gone aliens or, you know, anything.
I was thinking, you know, just at a whim, Owen Wilson with the top half as the Hulk and the lower half as the Zerg Queen from Aliens rubbed up with baby oil and wanting me to touch his broken nose. That was really my first horrifying thought, and I just went darker down the rabbit hole after that. So I figured maybe just keep it somewhat PG on this.
Sure. I was actually, and this is why I normally pinpoint my questions a little better, because open-ended questions can be extremely useless as applied to people like us. I'm going to keep it on theme.
Okay.
So, in a realm of space horror, what have you, if I open the door, what do I not want to see? I don't want to see anything that resembles a perfectly healthy, happy space station, because it's clearly a trap.
Yeah.
Clearly. Because if this thing has been off grid for years and years,
and everything looks just pristine and great,
and it looks derelict on the outside and the inside looks pristine and everybody's happy and cheerful. No,
it's a trap.
Yep. I'm getting back in the ship and I'm out.
Akbar's behind you. Just, it's a trap. Get the fuck out.
I might have a little angel Akbar.
Yeah.
You know, with some tentacle wings.
It's just two Akbars on either shoulder. And they're both saying it's a trap.
Right. A little clamshell halo. It's a trap.
Yeah. You know, also be scary. I was also thinking, if I open the airlock door to a derelict space station, and you just open it up and there's just more space.
Creepy.
That would be creepy, right? Yeah. Just like another dimension or something.
Yeah. No, I'm not for that, I think.
Do you have a derelict space station somewhere lodged in your home? Write to us, info@goblinscorner.com. Or as I mentioned, you can reach me or Matt. And yeah, let's go ahead and let's bypass all this stuff.
You ready?
Yeah, I'm just ready to dive in. You ready to dive into this thing?
I am.
Cool. So let's talk about the culture of space. And what we mean by that is, you know, the last couple of episodes we talked about space games and all the various different types of things you can play, whether you want to be a space wizard with a laser sword, or if you want to be an engineer as a starship captain, or if you just want to get a cool ship and you want to, you know, bang some people up.
Sure.
Or you want to get into like an intrigue, political type game with Traveler. We talked about all that stuff. Then we went and kind of got in the nitty gritty on storylines and descriptions for space.
Right.
So that's was stuff like stars, the various stellar systems, all of the intricacies in running a space game. And this last part here is just about the aliens, the people that you either may be playing, or NPCs.
Yeah, and for planets you're exploring or planets you're visiting.
Sure. And again, a lot of this stuff is what I like to consider pretty much common sense, but we're just putting a different spin on it, getting it out there for you guys to be able to build a better space game.
That's true. And the good side of this is you actually have some science background, and in fairness, you understand some of the astrophysics stuff better than I do. And so if I wanted to make an alien planet, or specifically if I wanted to make an alien race, I'd be like, hey, Eric, this is the race that I want to create. What the hell kind of world would create this person.
Yeah, so we'll throw a little bit of biology, some evolutionary biology, maybe some molecular biology in there. But I want to stress that whatever crazy game you have planned, if you don't want to get into the science of this and you just want to go for storyline and you've got a six-armed creature and you can't figure out how to make it work,
run it.
Yeah. All of this is just a little bit of extrapolation to justify stuff. But if you can't justify something in your game, that's totally fine.
Yeah.
Just run it. It'll be, I promise you, your players are never going to question you. And any of them that do, you just give them the DM glare.
Or you take it in game.
Stick them out an airlock.
Take it in game, man. What kind of planet creates this? Did you ask them?
Bring up the half Hulk, half Zerg Queen with Owen Wilson's broken nose face. That'll scare him. Baby oil rubbed all over his listening body.
So we were at planets.
Yeah. So if you have even a passing understanding of biology, you'll understand that nature itself influences the biology of an organism, which is why you have to kind of take planets into context with the alien race. If you're trying to just do a little bit of justification from, and I say this very loosely, science.
Sure.
Because we're just really just bullshitting here, but we're trying to put a spin on it. Now, in that case, also, culture plays a really big part of the species. It also influences how their society, their mentality, their emotional states, all of that stuff kind of takes into place. So before we get to the aliens part, let's talk about the planets themselves.
Sounds good. We're going to start with galactic position.
Yeah. Where is the alien race residing in from a galactic sense? So is it all the way on the western spiral arm of the Milky Way galaxy? Is it someplace in the center where there's a whole bunch of black holes flying about? Is it in deep space in between galaxies or on a rogue planet that's flying through?
Yeah, it's just hauling.
It could be anything. The position of other species to other species?
Yeah.
It could
be. Do you have neighbors?
Yeah. You could have the fact of whether it gets hit with coronal mass ejections. It could get hit with asteroids. There could be, as I mentioned, black holes.
Right.
So where is it from a galactic standpoint? And again, this may not even matter depending upon the game you play, but if you're doing a lot of star travel, it might matter a lot.
Yeah. And then you shrink that down one step.
Mm-hmm.
Where is it in their solar system, if it has one?
Yeah. So what's the distance from their star?
Right.
Or stars?
Right. And what type of star or stars do they have?
So we are finding that it's very common, for example, that binary star systems happen, at least in our galaxy.
Yeah.
Now, in your game, you can run with that. You can say a singular star system. What kind of star is it also?
It's a quadrary star system.
You could do it. Sure.
For those who were hearing that sound effect, that was Matt drawing something in the air to be seen by only Eric, because clearly you can't see it.
It was wonderful, though.
It was amazing.
You guys missed it. Completely missed it. So what type of star is it? You know, or stars in that effect. So do you have, for example, a white dwarf next to an enlarged red giant slowly devouring it? Do you have two medium-sized, yellow dwarf stars? Do you have a blue giant? Like, what is it, Betelgeuse, I think, is a blue giant?
Yeah.
This will affect a lot of different things. So first off, the distance of a planet to its star, obviously, heat.
Yeah.
Is it, is it slowly frying?
Heat, light.
Light. It also depends on whether it's fixed in terms of rotation sometimes.
Hmm. Now, see, I hadn't thought about that.
You can also consider how close it is to the star in terms of what other things might bombard it. So like solar wind, for example.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Coronal mass ejections and all that stuff. The further out it is, it might get hit by asteroids or comets or what have you. Depends on if there's other planets in relation to it, which we'll get to. So a lot of this stuff will affect all that stuff. Sunsets, of course, Tatooine had two burning stars, so it had a dual sunset.
Yeah.
So a lot of these things will determine what life looks like on that planet. A good example, a red dwarf means that you may not have the same coloration of plants. You could, but if you had a red dwarf, you might have plants which are on the black scale so that they can absorb a deeper shade of light.
Right. That makes sense.
I'm very loosely interpreting modern science, so don't take all any of this for verbatim.
And instead of like using that same premise, if you just slide the scale down, right, a lot of our flowers reflect UV light to draw in insects that see further into that spectrum. But if you just slide it down, maybe the flowers and things like that would be just very vibrantly colored because they're reflecting standard spectrum.
Absolutely.
So you could literally just take the whole visible spectrum as far as we know it and slide it slightly down to change how the aesthetic of the place looks and works.
Yeah. So play around with,
and that's logical. It just may not be scientific.
Logical works for this as well. Again, this is all storytelling, right? Yep. So we can make stuff up. And again, if you're playing, you know, in the Star Wars universe where it's literally space wizards running around with swords, make some shit up. It doesn't matter. Yep. They made a whole bunch of stuff up.
So much.
And then they have to go back and retcon it. Made the Kessel run in 12 parsecs. Parsec's a measure of distance, sir.
Well, yeah. That's
a measure of time.
He's a super good navigator, see?
Yeah.
He knows the shortcut.
He's so good, yeah. Let's zoom in a little bit more. Let's talk about the planet.
Well, so, first thing you got to know, how big is this thing?
Yep. Obviously, that affects a lot of different things, right? It affects the mass of the planet. So how much gravitational pull it has on the other planets in the solar system, if there are any. You've got gravity itself. So you might weigh one or two times the weight. And, of course, how much actual space is on the planet. So if it's a heavily industrialized society on a tiny little planet,
you've got problems.
Got problems. You got to get out
in space. Resource problems. Yeah.
So think about all of that. The gravity of the planet, which we'll get to in a minute, also determines the wear and tear on the planet as well. So the heavier the gravity, the faster mountains wear down when exposed to like rain, for example.
That's true. Also, I guess the more likely they are to catch meteorites and things like that.
Yeah.
Just because they've got a higher draw.
That's correct. So a lot of these things can affect life on that planet. So big planet might have big problems. Now you could have a massive planet, very large size planet with maybe not a lot of mass.
Like a gas giant.
Correct. But even it has a lot of gravity. But you could have, so for example, maybe like a super Earth, but it's not as dense.
Mm.
And so it maybe has the same gravity that our planet has. You could do that. Science is cool, guys. See, I'm just making shit up. Let's also talk about the axial tilt and the orbit type.
Okay. So axial tilt is basically where the angle, what the angle of the planet is on its rotation in relation to its star or stars.
Correct.
Woo.
Yeah.
I knew that one.
See?
Team Matt on the ball.
So what does this mean?
Well, if it's tilted head on, it literally means that your world is going to rotate, but still half of it's going to be in day and half of it's going to be in night almost eternally, depending on its orbit.
If it's straight up and down 90 degrees relative to the star, then there's not going to be much variation to the seasons.
That's true.
Now that combined with the type of orbit determines the seasons. So if you have a really elongated orbit, you might have extreme cold versus extreme heat. If it's perfectly circular, you may not have as much variation. But again, the axial tilt also helps with that too. So
if you had a straight up and down axial tilt, or, you know,
90 degrees.
Yeah, a 90-degree axial tilt.
Sure.
And a perfectly circular orbit. Basically, there are no seasons, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
Neat.
You'll have variations according to the pole, like at the poles and at the center and stuff, because it's still, you know, you're only getting a certain amount of light at the top and the bottom and versus the center, but
super boring.
Yeah,
super boring.
Super boring. But Starfinder has one of those.
Yeah.
Let's talk about some basic questions as well. So, for example, how long is a day? How fast does the planet rotate?
Could be a day, could be one Earth year. It could be 100 Earth years, or it could be 45 seconds if that thing's really hauling.
Mm-hmm. And how long is a year, for that matter? How fast does the planet spin around its orbit?
Once again, if it's hauling through the space, it could be a day for a whole year's orbit, or, you know, 100,000 years.
So all four of these things taken into context could mean seasons and then day-night cycles.
Yeah.
Going back on just Earth biology, lots of animals, birds, mammals, plants, all depend on a day-night cycle. For example, plants do their...
Expiration.
At night. So without that, you might have a problem, or you have a different biology that would compensate for that. A super fast spinning planet might have a different sort of dynamics.
Yeah. Like, how would a circadian rhythm, would you even have a circadian rhythm if the world's spinning fast enough that it's basically a strobe light?
Maybe. You don't know.
Yeah.
How would you be able to differentiate between light and dark with the strobe light effect? How would those eyes compensate? Would they blink in relation to the on-off, basically?
I don't know. That's a good question.
Again, these are all just some things to get the brain juices flowing.
Right.
Same thing with the seasons. Faster seasons versus longer seasons. We'll go to Starfinder, even though that's magic in space. But Starfinder had, I can't remember the planet name, but it's the one that for 100 years it's in winter, and then for like 100 years or so it's in spring, summer.
Right.
And the biology of one of the species on that planet literally grows fur, and they change and all that stuff over time if they're born in the time of winter versus the time of summer, which is a really cool thing to have for the same species of alien.
Sure. But if you're born in late summer, you're going to be having a rough life.
Yeah. Our buddy, by the way, our buddy who runs a bunch of Starfinder games is probably screaming right now. It's this. He knows exactly what it is.
Yep. And the book is right behind me.
But we're recording. Yeah, we're not reaching for that book. All right. Let's talk about gravity.
Okay. So you've got Earth gravity, which clearly we considered standard.
Yeah, we call that 1G.
Right. But elsewhere, our 1G might be nearly weightless to somebody on a super dense, massive planet.
Yeah.
Or it could be absolutely crushing to a race that developed in an asteroid field.
That is also correct.
So I can definitely see where that would make huge differences.
Higher gravity equals, at least from what we know of biology, worse falls, broken bones, and so forth. Less gravity, you have a greater chance to jump higher, and you may still fall and break yourself, but theoretically it's not as hurtful.
But wouldn't you theoretically fall further?
Well, that depends on the air pressure as well. And that's where it can get really interesting because, and I'm moving a little bit ahead of here, but you could have very thick atmospheric composition, so very soupy, high-pressure atmosphere and heavy gravity, and you could still have stuff flying. But if they fell, they would still break every bone in their body.
Sure.
Now, high gravity with low air pressure, which means the lift required to get off the ground is next to nothing, meant you're pretty much landlocked. Nothing's going to be flying. Low pressure, low gravity, same thing, right? Even though there's low gravity, you can get up higher, but you can't really stay aloft. High pressure, low gravity, then they might just live forever in the cloud cover.
Hmm. That's the part that my brain is just like, yes, those are definitely words. They all work.
So think of Jupiter. Jupiter's a gas giant. Heavy gravity, super heavy gravity. But parts of the cloud bands are really pressurized.
Mm-hmm.
And so you could stay aloft, especially with the wind speed there, because it's like a couple thousand miles an hour, something ridiculous like that.
Sure.
So you could have a species that's just kind of floating around in tops of the clouds, maybe in a band of methane, ammonia,
right,
or some kind of oxygenated band, because there's all kinds of different stratospheres of chemicals in the clouds.
Right.
And they could just live in that part of the cloud cover, much like how fish live in different parts of the ocean now.
Sure.
So think about, and that's just, again, atmospheric pressure and gravity.
So your average surface temperature and temperature range also will strongly affect what creatures develop there.
Mm-hmm. Is it a desert world? Is it a frozen world? A burning hellhole that's fixed only on one side towards its star, and then the backside it's a cold, just...
wasteland?
Wasteland, yeah.
Or if it's a low atmosphere world, it could go to from very, very hot to very, very cold from day to night cycles. So that you're going to either have things that develop ways to deal with those fluctuations, or you're going to have creatures that are that only come out in the day or the night.
Now, we're going to get a little sci-fi here, and I'll take that one step further. Titan, which is in our solar system, it's a moon, mm-hmm, Saturn, methane is a liquid on Titan.
Right.
And there are some people who feel that the methane could work very much like water on our world. So water is a universal solvent. I mean, it dissolves minerals, it dissolves all kinds of other chemicals, and that's how we feel that life got started, right? We believe that life got started, you know,
because
of a big muddy puddle with some electricity, right?
Right.
So there's nothing to say that you couldn't have the same chemical reactions in a highly frozen environment to us. Because remember, you know, water's just two gases that happen to mix together at this temperature variant.
Sure.
So liquid methane could be the same thing, right? Now, let's take it to the other extreme. What if it's super hot, you know, a couple... like 1,000 degrees, or even something so hot, like what is like 8,000 degrees or something ridiculous on some of these giant super Earths that we found, these exoplanets, where it rains liquid metal, like liquid iron is raining onto the planet.
Is it that rains diamonds? Someplace rains diamonds.
I can't remember.
But yeah, I know what you're talking about. Just the pressure necessary for that was what I was thinking of. But yeah, it's... yeah, I guess if you burn enough iron and nickel or what have you, it goes up, it condensates, and then it precipitates, right?
So you could have two different temperature extremes where life could potentially work. Now, we haven't proven that life works on either of these, but again, this is a space game. I mean, anybody play Master of Orion? They got like rock people walking around, silicoids.
Which
is ridiculous because we're made of carbon.
Right.
So why would they look like a bunch of rocks? Because it was made in the late 90s and that's what happens, right?
There is the argument that silicon is a possibility for life forms. Or are you saying that we don't look like carbon, so why would they look like rocks?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, we don't look like pencil lead. So the whole point about all of this is, think about the temperature extremes. How does the species that lives on this planet evolve with that temperature in mind? Is the temperature variation huge, or is it kind of constant as well? So if you have huge temperature variance, that'll be vastly different than just really hot or really cold.
Yeah, that makes sense. Your lava precipitating, or your iron precipitating planet, my brain, you know, it goes on tracks, right? So if you had one of those non-rotational planets,
mm-hmm,
right? Which means you've got the really hot side and basically the really cold side.
Yep.
At the equator, which would be vertical,
mm-hmm,
you would basically have a mountain of iron.
Sure.
From where it precipitates towards the cold side, freezes, and then just continues to pile up. Would you eventually have, no, you'd never have half of a planet because it will constantly build up, melt, and very interest.
Just replace the water on our planet with iron and you kind of get the difference. So there's nothing to, like, we don't know any of the weird, crazy chemistry experiments that sci-fi has right now, but this is all just stuff that to get the brain flowing. Let's draw it back a little bit and ask an easier question. First off, how many moons does your planet have, or ring systems?
Well, mine has 4.
You have 4 on your planet?
Yes.
Good. That's a good number of moons.
And just one ring, but it's all the way out. Like, so it is at the farthest distance.
What exactly is useful about having moons or a moon or ring systems?
Well, that's going, if you have liquid water on your planet, it's obviously going to determine your tides.
Yep.
Having multiple of them will even greater affect your tides.
Sure, lots of tug and pulls.
Yeah. So
push and pulls.
It's also going to determine how light and dark your nights are.
Potentially, yeah, depending upon how they are in relation to the star or stars.
So, yeah, there's a lot of interesting things. Also, once again, it will affect coloration of everything. If you have really bright nights, but they're only in specific shades because of the reflected light, that could change things.
Ring systems could also determine whether you get meteorites falling down, obliterating life, or seeding life.
Yeah.
Something that I didn't put into this bullet point, but we should also consider, where is your planet in relation to the other planets in its solar system as well?
Sure.
Let's use our planet as an example. We're in the inner part of the solar system, bunch of rocky cored planets. Outside the, you got an asteroid belt, and then you have a whole bunch of gas planets, and then basically ice balls, right? So Pluto, Sedna, and so forth. Then that's a very particular makeup in our solar system, but what's the solar system like where these aliens come from? Where are they in relation to this planet that we're making? How does that affect things? Because a lot of scientists believe Jupiter, for example, flings comets either our way or away from us.
Right.
Mostly away from us, which is why we're still here. Are there gas giants that do that? Are there, you know, comets that show up every couple hundred years and maybe the natives take it as a sign? Something, you know, ridiculous like that. These are fun things that you can throw in to add a little bit of flavor.
Yep. And also, if you've got a gas giant in position 1, then that has the potential for anybody with base technology or early technology to really confuse the less advanced species. Like, why every so often is there a huge black spot that travels across the sun?
Correct.
So just interesting things like that. Or if the planet closest to you is a gas giant in between you and the sun, every so often you're just going to have shade.
Yeah. Well, and we talked a little bit about atmosphere before, but another thing you can also consider is, can the stars be seen from the planet? If you have heavy cloud cover,
yeah,
you can't see the stars, which means they may not know that there are other stars out there.
For that matter, you may not even know you've got moons.
That is also correct.
Very interesting.
And finally, when we're building our planet, the presence of a liquid, whether it's water, ammonia, sulfuric acid, whatever happens to be your planet's substitute for an ocean, is it there or is it not there?
Right. Are you on a desert planet, whatever that desert happens to mean?
Yep, because the desert planet of Arrakis is far different than the water world of Caladan.
Yeah.
Is it swampy? Is there a mixture of multiple different environments, or is it one or the other?
Do you live in a place that sets it up so there are multiple universal solvents, which would eventually, depending on where you are in the planet, have very differing life forms?
Yes. And we'll get to the actual aliens in a minute, but I think that's worth noting because there's a lot of potential to not just have one species be the dominant thinking creature on this planet that you're making. It could be a whole bunch of other stuff too. And when we're thinking about alien species and playable characters, why not think about some monsters while you're at it?
Sure.
You know, you got a water world, all of the various horror things that come out with tentacles and teeth. immediately come to mind.
Sure.
You can get really, really weird with a bunch of really fun alien species.
All right, so now we've got the environment. We've got our checklist of everything we need to know.
And this is just a basic rundown of stuff. There's a lot more stuff you could throw in there.
Sure.
But now let's talk about our aliens.
But before that, we should probably get to our messages.
We'll be back right after this.
This episode brought to you by...
Let's dive into the world of fantasy, get into our character mindset, and play some D&D. We are the Dragon's Hearth. We are an actual play podcast that focuses on dramatic and emotional storytelling.
I got 15.
15.
I got 18.
18.
10.
You don't have to roll disadvantage for dexterity saving.
I didn't. We're currently running our first campaign called The Fight for Gwessar. It takes place in the campaign setting of Tal'Dorei, but set during the time when the elves and humans are at war as Drassic's human army conquers the land. Theoden, a respected retired captain of Drassic's army, and Tok Tok, a gnome artificer, are captured by a hidden tribe of green elves and about to be sacrificed until Kaelin, the chief's daughter, spares the intruders' lives. Fate had brought these lives together, and now they seek to overthrow the King Drassic before he destroys all the land, humans, and elves alike. It is now up to Kaelin to finish her trials as a Forest Spirit's protector, and for Theoden to undo his past sins and guide Kaelin to become the leader to unite the lands of Gwessar.
Please go.
I don't want to leave you, Dad.
I cannot bear the sight of losing you.
Come with me.
You know very much well that I can't. I have to defend the tree as long as you, as I can.
And I will stay with you.
We would love to share our stories with you. You can listen to new episodes every Friday, uploaded everywhere you can listen to podcasts. And of course, don't forget to connect with us on Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube.
This is a commercial break. If you guys would like to hear us review something like a product or service, or if you'd like us to cover something like a topic,
or if you'd like to sponsor an episode, we'd love to hear from you and have you contact us at info@goblinscorner.com.
So write to us, and maybe we'll talk to you. Maybe not. And we're back.
Welcome back.
All right, so when we last left off, we were talking about building a planet so that your species can evolve on that planet.
Now we've got to build a species that has evolved from your planet.
So let's talk about evolution.
All right. What is basic evolution?
Well, first off, and again, everything I'm saying comes with a caveat. If it doesn't fit your campaign,
screw it.
Toss it out, right? We're just giving you some bullet points you can play with. How did the species develop? What planetary factors that we mentioned previously influenced your alien race in a way that makes them unique? How did geography play a part? So, geographic isolation versus everybody in a big melting pot. So if they evolve from the ocean, there's a whole bunch of shit in the ocean versus evolving on a mountaintop next near nothing else.
Yeah. We were born in a hidden valley.
Speaking of which,
geography. So that goes back to the isolation thing, right? Mm-hmm. If your species developed, well, Australia. Okay, let's just say it. Australia, it had very evolutionary specific to its location.
Yeah, there's some weird shit in Australia.
Yes. Platypi.
Yeah. The platypus, the wombat, all kinds of, any of the marsupials, really. In fact, they're the only place, aside from possums or marsupials, right?
They are.
Yeah. With the exception of possums, I think, there really aren't that many marsupials anywhere but in Australia. There's a couple.
Yeah. They just have the highest population of them.
That's correct. So where does your species live? And we have a couple examples.
Sure. And do they live in the trees?
So are they brachiopods?
Right. Underwater?
Sure. Yeah. And
aquatic.
It's a trap.
Exactly.
Floating in a gas of sulfur dioxide. Lava creatures living in a thermal vent.
Sure.
They could be anything that you want them to be. And if you think all of this is ridiculous, hey, there are hydrothermal vents at the bottom of the ocean that are several hundred degrees Celsius that could cook a live lobster. And there are lobster living down there that are completely adapted to the heat.
You also have the polychaete worms that live literally on the vents. Oh, yeah, they're chemosynthetic.
Big,
yep.
Big ass tube worms. Yeah, chemosynthesis. That's a good evolutionary thing to consider. What does it eat?
So obviously they could eat other creatures.
Or minerals.
Or plants.
They could be photosynthetic.
And obviously chemosynthetic, as we pulled up.
Absolutely. What do they drink? What do they breathe? All of these give a unique flavor to your alien race.
Sure. If they've got methane, if they're methane breathers, you know, they're going to have different color blood. That's something you might want to consider. Like, what color does your critter bleed? And you can make it up. It doesn't matter. But
yeah, throw some sci-fi jargon into it to explain it if you really feel the need. If not, just be like, yeah, it's the science behind it. Again, your players are probably not going to care.
But it's good for the description.
Good for the description, and that's what we're going for. We're going for the story here, not necessarily the mechanics behind all of this. Now, some other fun things to consider. Gravity. We waxed philosophical about that a little while ago.
Right. So, what does it mean, right? If you're on a high gravity planet, you're probably pretty strong, and you're also probably very used to operating on a high gravity planet.
Yep.
So you're going to operate like just a drunken giant.
You might be short and squat.
Yeah.
Because of the actual compression.
Yeah, you're going to most likely have very dense bones and all of the stuff necessary to survive in that environment.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about temperature range again. Whether you're living on an ice planet versus, you know, a nuclear wasteland versus whatever.
Right.
What kind of light sensitivity do they have?
Sure. You may have aliens that see into all sorts of spectrums, and you may have some that are completely blind because they operate off of different senses altogether.
Yep. Are there any other intelligent species or partially intelligent species present on this planet as well? That'll determine whether they are either warlike or cooperative, or there's some kind of evolutionary pressure.
Right. One of the things you mentioned before that I wanted to touch on really quick. If you're in a high pressure atmosphere that has a large oxygen content to it, you can have super insects.
You could.
Because part of what controls the size insects get here is oxygen saturation and pressure.
Yeah, because they have, spiracles.
Yep.
Instead of lungs. Although
some have book lungs.
Some of them have book lungs. And was it the really terrible horror movie Mimic? I don't mm-hmm. know if you ever saw it where they bred this mantis-looking thing to kill all the cockroaches, and then it ate the rats and so on and so forth.
Right.
It turned basically into this cockroach mantis-looking thing. Human. That looked like, yeah, and it had these, basically it evolved lungs. You could totally go crazy with this in your game. Of course, you guys have seen Starship Troopers. They've got all kinds of weird looking monsters. And there's a ton of sci-fi movies, films, books that you can draw from to justify whatever weird ass biology you come up with here.
And speaking of biology and physiology, that's what's next on the list.
Yeah. What's the stats?
Right.
What do you got? How tall are they? How strong are they? More importantly, how many arms?
Legs.
Yeah.
Teeth.
Heads. You have two heads. Zaphod Beeblebrox.
Sure. Maybe maybe they don't even have legs. They've just got a whole bunch of arms that they roll around on.
They could be a nose with a rolling.
For the rolling ball.
Going back to Starfinder.
Yep.
Mobility is a big thing, though. How do they move?
Yeah.
Because when you're describing a alien species, that's something that your characters, your players, can actually kind of latch on to. The look, and then the mobility, and then, of course, when they start trying to talk to you or what have, or eat you.
Or maybe they're psychic. They don't move. They allow the wildlife to move for them.
Potentially, sure. You could definitely justify that as well. How strong are they? That's another thing to consider. Are they stronger than, and you can put them in relation to whatever
your base race is.
Yeah, your base race is. What's their endurance? Can they survive toxins that would kill, you know, humans?
Right. Do they require toxins that would kill humans?
Oh, yeah. They might need cyanide to live.
Right.
Are they fragile? You know, those sorts of things. Again, nice to have. Your characters may not know this right off the bat, but with some science checks or whatever, if they start fighting them, then it'll become apparent.
Yeah. Do they sleep? Speaking of fighting things.
Mm-hmm. Are they diurnal versus nocturnal?
That will determine, obviously, when they operate, but we jumped ahead a little bit. What are they? Right? Is it an animal? Is it a vegetable? A mineral? What are you working with?
Yeah, what's the generic description you can tell your players? So what's their taxonomy?
Right.
You know, is it big old sleepy cat folk? Is it a crab with 8 arms? Is it a purple lizard with alien tentacles? What is that species that you're trying to describe? And by the way, going on that, this is a great storyteller note, descriptions.
You are presenting a completely alien world and species to your players. They're going to want to know what they see, what they smell, what they hear, what they're working with.
Yeah, so describe that stuff. Now, what does the alien see? That's another consideration as well that we neglected to mention.
Sure, because if they see in different color spectrums or outside of what we consider the visible spectrum at all, everything is going to be completely different for them.
And I'll tell you one way that the player characters can find that out is if they go to the alien ship. So let's say they board a spaceship, this alien race. All of a sudden, everything's wacky because they're not able to, there's no actual colors, but maybe the species sees by echolocation. And so all of the slight disturbances and bumps in the hull is a language to them.
That makes sense. Also, what direction is everything facing, right? Everything is built for your alien.
Yeah.
Not for your PCs.
Yeah. If they've got eyes on the back of their head versus the front, that'll definitely change some things up.
Yeah. The chair will face one way, but all of the monitors and everything will be facing the opposite direction.
Exactly. So one of the things we want to consider is, again, going back to the basics, going back to descriptions of at a glance, like at a glance. And remember, your player characters may not want to know more about this. They might just shoot first and ask questions later. But if this is something that is going to be a plot hook for your game, if this is something that they might actually play or interact with, then all of these questions are for you to build that species, that alien, that crazy looking alien, whatever it happens to be.
And if you're going to make it playable, think about what effect that's going to have on your other players.
That's right.
Because something that doesn't see in a visible spectrum and what it would require on the ship that it shares with the other players is something to think about.
And that'll also be a fun role-playing challenge for your player characters as well.
Yeah. Everything's got to be in Braille, or not even Braille, but if you echolocate, right, everything needs a knob instead of just a flat push button.
Yeah, things could get kind of wacky then.
Yeah. So just something to think about.
So after that basic description of how many arms does it have, how has it evolved to its environment, and so on and so forth, you're going to kind of want to think about how it thinks.
Sure. You've got a body. Now what is operating that body?
Now, this is a role-playing versus descriptive thing. So, you know, when you're telling the description of your alien species, it's not going to be like, and it sees all other creatures as part of a collective hive or whatever it happens to be in terms of its mentality. This is something that I think most likely will come up when the characters interact with this alien species.
And unless the players have a dossier, then it's going to come out actual moment.
You just give it to them straight.
Sure.
But you can come up with some basic stats.
Yeah. Once you develop certain ticks per race, right? That's an easy way to describe it, is if your baseline is human and you've got this millipede race, and they have no problem with eating the dead or any of that stuff that most civilized races would look down on, would consider it some form of cannibalism. They just consider it the sensible thing to do because wastage is ridiculous.
Oh, your companion just died. Well, let's make lunch.
Right.
Sure.
But you wouldn't know that just by looking at them. So that has to come out in the story.
So some basic mental traits like that, like how do they relate to other alien species and so on and so forth? How intelligent are they? How do they react to new ideas?
You made a great note. Are they creative versus industrious?
Sure.
Because those, while they're not polar opposites, they tend to have very different ideas on how things are done.
Mm-hmm. And again, are they singular entities or are they connected like a hive or some kind of neural network of some sort?
Or even like pack connected.
Oh, pack mentality? Sure. Yeah, and that happens a lot in the animal kingdom, so why wouldn't it happen in a species?
Sure. All right, so now that you've got their brain, let's talk about their heart a little bit, or their emotions, or lack thereof.
That's true.
You could run the full spectrum from completely cold and logical to literally empathic.
Yes.
It's a wide range. I mean, we do that in our own species. So
ballpark an average for this alien race and call it a day. Are they Vulcans? What are they? You know, are they coldly logical? Are they nothing but
Andorians?
Yeah. I was going to go there. Thank you.
I'm here to help.
What's their sense of morality as well?
Do they have one?
Mm-hmm.
Are they amoral? In which case they just don't recognize it. Or what if they recognize morality, but don't care? If they're just like an immoral race.
Yeah, they could be. They don't have a concept of good or evil, or they just, again, they're just mean bastards, which could also be part of the fun in creating this alien species.
Yeah.
A lot of this will play out on their society when you get to building the alien species society as well. Because they're not singular creatures. How do they react amongst others of their kind? And this comes down to, I think, a very excellent point.
Conflict.
Yeah. How do they react to conflict? Whether it's just a simple jab in terms of like a verbal jab.
Sure.
Or an actual fist in the face.
And that's very much going to be based on how and where that species developed. If they developed in a place where they were the dominant species for a very long time, then anyone questioning what they're doing or how they're going about something will probably be a form of conflict for them.
They might view it as a threat.
Right. Whereas on a planet where there are multiple species that were in competition, they may react to conflict immediately.
Yep.
Instantaneously. Because that's what you do. It's what you have to do.
Yeah. So think about stuff like that. Let's talk about their society a little bit. What do we got on under society?
Well, first off, what's their technological level? Because that's going to determine where they are in the overall society of the galaxy or universe or whatever you're working with.
Yeah, we would assume in a space game, you might have an alien race that has starships and stuff like that. But there's plenty of games where Ewoks, thank you. Ewoks, somewhat tribalistic society, right? But you could have anywhere from Stone Age all the way up to an industrial age to sci-fi age to post-scarcity society, and you could run the gamut.
Yep.
Travelers is a game we mentioned before where it could literally be anything from corporate hell, cyberpunk, to an atomic wasteland, to high imperial, I've taken over half the galaxy.
And that's when you get into like what are their, not just what are their technologies, but what are their cultures? What are they aiming for?
Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of different things to consider when considering their cultures. And we've talked some about that in previous episodes, but let's give a brief overview on some of this culture stuff.
Right. Who's in charge?
Yeah. Take me to your leader.
Right.
So what's the pecking order?
Sure. You could have, you know, a feudal system. You could have a presidential system.
You could have caste systems. Be several orders of different,
yeah,
different species or subspecies too. Like they could have subspecies that have a higher or lower, I guess, value to the society.
Or not even value, just position. Like if you've got an insectoid race,
mm-hmm,
and
you've got the workers,
a queen, and you have drones, and you have,
yeah, they could be separated into like farming caste versus warrior caste versus,
right,
what have you. Is it an oligarchy, a theocracy, some kind of crazy technocracy? What else do we have in there? Corporate?
Media.
Yeah, like a media-based society, which I thought was really kind of a cool thing to consider.
Sounds awful.
Sounds like our society, really, right now.
To a large extent.
Yes.
So once you know who runs the show and how that goes, what do they want?
What does the society value? Right.
Do they want, is it money?
Giant foreheads?
Could be. Maybe you're a combat-based society, and the person who is the most vicious or most victorious wins.
What if they consider certain smells to be more value than other things?
Well, we do. Perfume.
Yeah. So maybe they put a value on smells.
Yeah. That could be colors. Maybe they're looking for the super intelligent shade of blue.
It's possible. Everyone is. What do they consider to be a cultural taboo? What do they not value? What do they shun?
And, you know, they're everywhere. Cultural taboos are everywhere. And we, unless you spend a lot of time thinking about them, you don't even necessarily notice that they're in place.
A couple places you could really like look up a lot of the society stuff. Obviously the Star Trek episodes are really good for stuff like this. Babylon 5 is another good one.
Sure.
And those type of shows they kind of play out a lot of this. Some Stargate SG-1, although it's very cheesy and it's mostly humans. But still, any of this stuff can kind of give you an idea of what we're aiming for here is we're looking for stuff that just how the society runs.
Right. And then if you're going to talk about taboos, you've got to talk about religion or philosophies. What do they worship?
Yeah, do they have gods?
Do they have devils without gods? Are they just afraid of something?
And then also, what is their type of influence respective to other societies or other species? What's their power?
Yeah.
So do they have, for example, are they ruling other societies?
Are they just the military arm?
Yeah, just a big-ass army that's taken over the galaxy. Could they be maybe wield some economic might like the Ferengi?
Informational.
Just series of traders.
Yeah, that could either be like espionage-based or that could be technical-based.
So going back to Master of Orion, the Darlocks versus the Cylons?
Yeah.
Are they, maybe they have some kind of religious power? Church of the, Stellar Emperor.
Sure. Why not? Or none. What if they're the people who are on the bottom of the heap?
Maybe they're oppressed.
Yep.
Or maybe they're part of the cog in the rest of the galaxy. If they're if you have like a mixed species setting.
And, you know, maybe they don't consider themselves oppressed, right? If you go back to the whole insectoid race, like the people on the lowest rung, they're not oppressed from their point of view.
Or Skittermanders.
Yeah.
Skittermanders are taken over by the Vesk, and the Vesk basically are like, this is our world now, and Skittermanders are, all right, how can we help? What? But they don't believe that they're oppressed. They're just like, yeah, we're helping these guys.
Oh, the Skittermanders are Greek. That's what they are. They, oh yes, we have been conquered. Let us show you our ways.
And then they change from within.
Yep.
Yeah, that works out. So also another thing to consider when we're talking about different species and stuff and how they relate, what are some outside influences that may affect your alien race?
So what if your race early on, as even as early on as Stone Age technology, right? What if your race was interfered with by neighboring intergalactic or interstellar travelers?
So you're meddled. Ancient aliens, so to speak?
Yeah. Maybe you were molded for a specific purpose by another race that knew exactly what it was doing.
Yeah, it could be influence. Maybe they're part of a galactic society is another consideration.
Yeah.
So they already exist, or they just discovered star travel, so they're babes in the woods.
But from the opposite side of that, maybe they're just conquerors. They're taking over everything.
Just rolling through, just mowing over planets, disintegrating them, blowing them up with their Death Star. How dare they? Or again, they could be oppressed. They could be rebels.
Right.
Bunch of rebel scum.
Yes.
You've got a lot of different things to choose from. Finally, and this influences the society and in some ways the alien race as well, what kind of resources did they have available for them? Obviously, if it's a multi-planet system type thing, then they're going to have a lot more resources than if they're just confined to one planet. But we can list a couple of them off.
I mean, obviously, you've got mineral resources.
Yep. You could have anything grown or bred, so agriculture or plants, animals, types of things.
Weapons and technology.
Absolutely. Going on that, artifacts of some sort. Maybe artifacts that they had previously created or another species created on their planet.
That's definitely true for, you know, a metalled planet. That could be a lot of fun. They could have vehicles or simply fuel for vehicles.
So, yeah, starship crystals, or they make
lithium crystals.
Yeah, they make starships or something like that. They just could be a bunch of, you know.
Yeah, they could be a very technologically minded race, and they make the best ships.
I'm going back to Arcane and making spelljamming helms. Yes.
That works. Contraband, man. Maybe they're the only planet in the world that grows the finest weed.
They got the good shit.
Yes. And they will always have the best. You know, maybe it's how far they are from the sun. Maybe it's the soil. But they have the most premium of the most premium.
Yeah, man. You're on the pleasure planet. They got the good stuff. They might, again, information. They might just be information brokers. And if you want to know something, there you go.
Yeah.
And on information also, it could just be their resources are financial resources. Which kind of fits with information sometimes.
And, you know, maybe they just trade in social cred.
They just make game shows for all the other star systems?
Well, there's that, but also, what if you want to be the galactic president? Well, you're going to need to come talk to us. Let us do some interviews for you.
They know a guy who knows a guy with three arms.
Exactly.
Yeah, I got that. So hopefully all of these different things are churning in your brain right now so that you can make an alien species with some flavor and a little bit of backstory. And again, you can use as much of this as you like, or you can use as little of this as you like.
There's nothing wrong with fast and loose.
That's right. And speaking of fast and loose, we just kind of wrote down some themes that you could go on. So we're going to riff real quick on a couple of these.
And just types of worlds?
Yeah, just different types of worlds and maybe the alien race that, that happens to live on it.
All right. So, Hive World.
Well, the Zergs, of course, for the swarm.
Yep. Oh, or on the other side of that, a psionically tethered society.
So, like a collective ruled by some kind of ultimate republic.
Yep.
Yeah. And of course, the Zerg world is arid. It's got big, giant citywide termite mounds and looks like Starship Troopers, the alien planet for that.
Sure.
Jungle Worlds. There's another theme.
Klandathu. I got it. All right. Jungle Worlds. Now, I mean, obviously you could have brachiopods as your
ape-like creatures. You could have bird, avians, intelligent avian species.
Yep.
An intelligent species of butterflies.
Sure.
Why not? Yeah. There you go. A prison colony. Maybe this was where all of the species were sent to live, and they all died off, and maybe just whatever chemistry created the alien race from this, or maybe a long time ago, this species was sent there for crimes committed, and they've long since forgotten because it's been thousands of years.
Sure. Or you could also do a prison planet where some of those species were close enough together.
Oh, and so they interbred?
Yep. And so the ones that couldn't interbreed died out, but the ones that could there's a whole new race based off of the prison planet versus off of the individual planets before.
That's pretty cool. I like that.
That'd be neat.
Yeah. Mining worlds, there's another one. What kind of mining species do you have? Well, they could be anything from insectoid crawling horrors to little gnomes digging with their laser picks.
Sure. Anything.
I want a laser gnome. I want a laser gnome race so bad now. That's what we're going to call them. Laser gnomes. Laser gnomes.
Sure.
And they just look like they have all of the laser tag equipment on them with picks.
Why not?
Feudal colonies or feudal worlds. What kind of strange alien species would you conjure up with something like that?
Humans.
Humans? Okay. Yeah. That's not as fun.
But failing that, I mean, seriously, a feudal system is might makes right, and then you develop the system around that concept, right?
So some kind of competitive species.
Yeah.
So you could see canines, cats, maybe?
Could be. Canines, certainly. Some cats, yeah, leonids. That mm-hmm. makes sense. Equines, even.
Horses?
Yeah.
Yeah, like a horse race of...
Bojack.
Bojack Horseman in space. That'd be awesome.
Bad horse.
Let's stop. Farm worlds.
Everybody needs to eat. It could be anything.
It could be anything. You'd have intelligent cows, or you could just have some kind of crazy blimp-like creature that harvests other animals and feeds the galaxy.
Yeah. It could anything. Just absolutely anything. Everything has to eat something. Mm-hmm. So. Oh. The holy home world, the theocracy, religious home world.
Okay, it is a box that has a big green X on it,
mm-hmm.
and it's white,
mm-hmm.
and all of its creations stem from this, and they're small little white boxes with X on them, and they have these interesting little manipulators. Which are four buttons and tiny little controllers.
So you're saying that it's Xbox meets the Borg?
Yeah. So it's just an entire collective of intelligent Xboxes.
Sure. You could totally do that. You could also do...
And they pray to the blue screen of death.
Well, yeah. You could also do a planet that had to be abandoned, but that... is culturally remembered.
Hmm.
And so literally the planet is the deific form.
Oh, that's cool. Kind of like our version, like whenever you see
Mother Earth.
Yeah. Like, yeah, I was about to say of Gaia.
Yeah.
That's neat. Yeah. So there's a lot of different spins and stuff like that. Speaking of like things that were left, a plague world would be a kind of a cool, what kind of species develops from that? So you could go, the things that survive the plague, like cockroaches and rats, or it could be a species that is just barely hanging on, or they're living in, you know, airtight domes. And what kind of technologies would they invent to survive a mass plague? Maybe they just have a whole bunch of Zoom meetings everywhere they go.
Could be.
It could be anything.
That's the name of the planet, Zoom Zoom.
Yeah, Zoom Zoom.
A dead world. It's just been, a world can be dead for so many reasons.
Yep. So you could still have life living, but the world itself has died due to some catastrophe. Or you could have the technological remnants of the alien, the biological alien.
Right.
So maybe your ship lands, there's just nothing but dead ruins everywhere, and they walk up to some kind of what appears to be a flat screen circuit board type thing, and it's the electronic consciousness of the previous biological aliens.
Yeah.
There's your species, right? Yep. Now they're electronic. You got a lot of different fun things. Or you can go Warhammer with, what is it, the slightly undead, weird...
Oh, yeah. Also, for a dead world, it could be a world where the original species was self-destructive.
Mm-hmm.
And they just refused to recognize what they were doing until it was too late.
Alternatively, you could have two species or two cultures of the same species at war currently, which has been many a Star Trek episode.
Sure. War World.
War World.
This next one, I'm curious where your head's at on this.
Mm-hmm.
The Artifact World.
It would be a species which has hyper-advanced technology because a previous civilization existed there, and they picked up on all of the goodies.
Hmm.
But they don't necessarily understand the science behind it. But maybe they were able to remake them or make part of it.
Okay.
A lot of opportunities with that.
My brain actually went to something like Cybertron.
Cybertron would be cool.
Right, because it's kind of an artifact world. It's a technological
based artifact world. The whole damn world turns into a robot.
Right. So, yeah, that's...
A Unicron as well. Yeah. I am Unicron, voiced by Orson Welles.
I mean, you're old-fashioned gas giant.
Yeah. So you could be a Brethedon floating around in the stew of the ammonia stews.
I'd like to be a jellyfish. Okay, I'm going to stop.
Could be some kind of flying creature. Or you could just be, a guy who really likes capes mining some atmosphere.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, just a hustler, scoundrel. Malt liquor drinker, you know.
Just angry. Some clown stole your ship years ago.
Yeah, fuck that guy. I'm trying to make that damn Kessel run. We've got a couple more. A corporate world, obviously. We all know what that looks like. It sounds like hell.
Right.
A
forbidden world.
Oh, yeah. Forbidden planet? Come on. It could be anything.
It's got a giant red X on the map.
Bunch of Amazons running around just, you know, spearing dudes with their air pills and 1950s retro rockets. Or it could be something even more interesting, like some kind of dark alien species. Oh, well, actually, Forbidden World was the basis of Alien.
Yeah.
I mean, it was, don't go there. The species it created all died because of this thing.
So, yeah, a planet could be forbidden for dozens of reasons, none of them good.
Right. Could be anything.
That could also have been named Horror Movie Planet.
Sure.
Or Hell Planet, or whatever.
Don't go there planet. Right. Yeah. And now on the flip side, a pleasure planet.
Welcome to Flostin Paradise.
Yeah, go to Ryza, man. You've been to Ryza, man? Yeah, it's freaking great.
So yeah, it is what it is, right? It's a pleasure planet.
It's a pleasure planet. You can come up with some aliens with that. And then you could go completely crazy. What if it's a planet surrounded by a bunch of black holes, caught in some kind of crazy time dimensional thing? What kind of aliens would develop with that? That's, by the way, or locked away in another dimension. That was the basis for the Antarans, by the way, in Master of Orion.
Gotcha.
Or a world existing, I don't know, entirely of cliff societies, and they all overlook lava ocean.
Sure.
So, I mean, use whatever we have given you to come up with some strange and crazy, unique alien species.
What if you've got a world that's just a flame curtain? Because you've got methane seas on the frozen side and you've got molten lava on the sun-facing side, and where the two meet, there's literally just a flame curtain that cuts the world in half.
That doesn't sound very fun at all, but I bet that species, if it survives, will be badass.
Whatever lives there is fucking monstrous.
Bad. Fucking badass.
So was that Forbidden Planet? Forbidden Planet.
Forbidden That's, Planet. Yes. There you go. Flame curtain planet is definitely a Forbidden Planet. Do you have any ideas that you would like to make an alien species from? Write to us. info@goblinscorner.com, or you can reach me, eric@goblinscorner.com.
Or I'm matt@goblinscorner.com.
You can also hit us up on Twitter. We're @goblinscorner.
You can hit us up on Facebook.
Goblins Corner.
Right. Instagram.
The Goblins Corner. We're also goblinscorner.com.
Yes.
And we have a Twitch. twitch.tv/goblinscorner.
We tried to make it as confusing as possible.
And just a bunch of goblins corners and a V stuck in there for the Instagram part.
Right.
Well, that's all the time we have for today. Hopefully you've enjoyed this 3-part series. Go out, make some aliens, make some worlds, have some fun with your space game.
Yeah, absolutely. Just get crazy.
Get crazy with it. My name is Eric.
And I'm Matt.
We'll see you next time.
Good night.
The Goblin's Corner is written and produced by Eric Holden and Matt Staples.
Show song by the Mighty D20.
What a wonderful guy.
This is a Subterranean production.
The end.